Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And folks, it is now or never. I can't emphasize enough. It's not that it's funny. It's pathetic. It's pathetic that we're act. So I'll just do a quick response to a meme. You know, there's a meme out there that I saw on social media, and I made a comment to it because the meme was basically stating, why is it that kids back in the 50s showed respect in public and in society? Well, folks, that's because that's how we were indoctrinated. We were indoctrinated to behave a certain way. And so those kids that were growing up in the 50s ended up, you know, revolting and rebelling. But that's common. As a matter of fact, the revolt and rebellion that is innate within all children, that's occurred for ages. Even John Adams' grandson, I believe it was John Quincy Adams' son, that was kicked out of Harvard for his riotous behavior because he was a rebellion. And even Thomas Jefferson talked about the kids at the University of Virginia that they created in his honor. Or actually, I don't think it became the University of Virginia later. Bottom line, it is innate that kids do rebel, but there's something to be said about indoctrination. Back in the days of the 50s, kids weren't being, you know, flamboyant, and we weren't indoctrinated to even consider changing our sex. Those types of topics were absolutely wrong, immoral, to inject into a child's mind that didn't have the maturity to deal with those types of topic matters, period. And so what we're looking at today is truly the face of evil, because we are actually throwing our children into the fire with the devil. Anyway, I want you to cogitate more on what kind of president does America deserve. I'm going to be bringing this up either every day or so forth as we move forward, as I go through the Constitution. One of the other things I want to make sure I talk about, and I'll be really brief on this, Paul Venable, running for U.S. Senate out of Missouri, actually had a debate. And his debate, he nailed it. He delivered a great performance. And the Missouri Independent, this rag of a newspaper, which, you know, all of these progressive newspapers, all these, I'll just say propaganda mills, they hide behind the Constitution. And when anybody else makes, so in other words, they cherry pick. Just to be clear, they cherry pick this thing called the First Amendment right of freedom of the press. Oh, yeah, I mean, the Constitution is critical because, you know, that's how we get our freedom. Well, hold on, they don't actually get their freedom that way. They only get their freedom from the federal government, from censorship. Doesn't apply to the states, folks. Let's remember that the states could reel in the propaganda machines very quickly and very easily. Just letting you know. And if you want to know about how we can do that, you've missed some of my episodes, but we'll get back into it. But you need to listen to these shows. Anyway, so Paul Nally was nailing it, and they were actually kind of glorifying the Libertarian candidate and the Democratic candidate. And the Republican candidate, Eric Schmidt, failed to even show. So I'm just here to tell you, folks, if you get a chance to watch, or if you go to Paul Venable's campaign page, he should be putting up each of his responses and then providing some, you know, some editorializing, some notes regarding how it was covered by the Missouri Independent. Check it out. Folks, the progressive media does not want you to hear the truth. And so there's a reason why the best and most qualified person to become senator, to become the next senator for the state of Missouri, is Paul Venable. You know, when I make an endorsement, It is not a light endorsement. You'll notice I didn't endorse Art. I supported him. I wanted to see him move forward, but he had to get across a threshold to get my full endorsement. And he just never got there because as a lawyer, he couldn't put aside his loyalty to the bar. And that's a typical problem we face whenever we're talking to a lawyer. They may be good and they may be conservative and they may want to do some good things, but they're not going to do all of the things they need. But he was a better candidate than any of the other candidates in Idaho's attorney general race for the primary. But that's basically sour grapes, right? Said the fox. Anyway, what we want to do is we kind of want to move forward. And I'm going to tell you two more things. I told you that there were two preambles. And actually, that's incorrect. I forgot that there is a preamble to the Bill of Rights. Now, we'll get to that when we get to that part, because we're going to read that preamble. But what's interesting is if you look for a preamble, and if you do a search for Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, the preamble in Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution, you will not find any reference to that being a preamble. And the framers actually clearly identified it as a preamble. That it was basically identifying, it was a declaratory statement identifying why they were providing the foregoing powers. And so this is why, folks, definitizing the Constitution is critical, because most people think that the federal government has this ambiguous general power for the general defense and welfare of the United States, and they don't possess that power. It was stated by Governor Randolph, who was a huge advocate for the Madison Plan or the Virginia Plan. He was the guy that actually presented the Virginia Plan at the Constitutional Convention. And he became a huge advocate. He wouldn't even sign that Constitution because he had some issues with it because it didn't have a Bill of Rights. And then during the convention, he had a change of heart because he recognized that as a leader, this was the absolute best document ever written on the face of the earth in governing, and that it did not need a Bill of Rights. It took him a while to get there, but once he got there, he understood why the Constitution didn't need a Bill of Rights. The only reason, and I believe this is why the Lord moved Madison in that way, because I believe Madison was becoming a powerhouse in governing and the foremost authority in the United States on what government should do. And so he was the most respected amongst his peers. I mean, they were just in awe of this man because every time he came to speak, he was prepared. I don't even hold a light to this man. But that being said, when James Madison actually, became moved to support the Bill of Rights and adding these amendments to the Constitution, that to me was the evidence that the Lord moved him in that way. Because why, folks? Because he didn't know down the road, because Madison's major complaint about the fact that they didn't need a Bill of Rights because states didn't have them. Let's not be hypocritical. If all government should have them, then the state should have them too. And and he didn't know that the Lord had planned on applying these Bill of Rights to the states. And that happened in the 14th Amendment. And so, to me, the only good reason why Madison actually, was moved that way was by the divine hand of providence. There was really no other explanation other than the fact that he knew that that's what the states wanted, and he was moved to support that. Had he not been so moved, I don't think that we would have had a Bill of Rights. Go read Madison's journey in the Bill of Rights. I think it was by either Guzman or by Woods. I think it was Guzman that wrote that book. And Guzman points out that Madison was the key figure in ensuring that we got the Bill of Rights. Folks, I'm telling you this because when we're dealing with the progressive media, when we're dealing with the propaganda within our own academia. I mean, even Hillsdale College won't call a lot of these things out. Don't believe Hill College is going to teach you about the Constitution. They're going to make sure that you learn some basic principles about it, but they don't know and they don't understand, and their course criteria is not based upon the what we call the ratification debates or the legal arguments and documents that support and actually clarify. These are the terms and conditions of the Constitution. So anyway, where we finished, right? So we finished in Article 1 and we were in Section 3. And one of the things I kind of want to go back to, nowhere, and I'm going to try to bring this around again. I want you to listen to anywhere where the Congress, our public servants, have been granted immunity above their own laws. Now, we're going to actually hit this when they actually talk about passing laws, because there will be some points coming up where they will be immune to the laws of the land. In other words, believe it or not, your legislators, even your state legislators, are above the law. They can't be arrested while they're in session unless it is for a felony or a major crime. But if you're speeding, they can't stop you. They can't detain you. They don't give you a ticket. I mean, for a lead foot like me, I should be a state legislator or congressman. But anyway, we'll be right back after this. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so let me just kind of finish up what I'm saying, because there's nowhere in the Constitution that allows Congress, if they pass laws for America, that immunes them from this. And I want to point out, in the Massachusetts ratification debates, this was pointed out as well. It's... Unfortunately, it was the only ratification debate that actually stipulated this. This should have been commonly spoken of. However, it doesn't need to be commonly spoken of because it is applicable across the board. When the contract is being defined by any part of the party, that definition, that clarification is applicable to all parties within that same compact. In other words, there's no way one party can be treated differently in the compact. So when I talk about nullification, and this is why this is so important, nullification, when a single state nullifies the law, it in essence violates the union, and it basically, one state is thumbing its nose at the other states and say, we're not going to abide by this rule. It's kind of like if you had a family and all of your children in the union of your family, well, you have one child that wants to be a rebellion and wants to basically say, I'm not going to abide by this rule. And I'm not. What does that do to the family? It actually creates chaos, because as each children cherry picks the laws that they don't want to follow in the family, next thing you know, you have chaos. Next thing you know, the parents have lost control. The union begins to absolutely suffer, and it in reality, it's not about the parents losing control. In our case, the federal government then can start manipulating and actually can start playing, because what ends up happening when we, as the states in this compact, start going our own separate ways and start creating chaos, that's when we become divided. United we stand. So in other words, we should not be looking at nullification. We should be looking at uniting, not going our own separate ways and demanding. This is why Madison talks so severely about the evils of nullification. And you've got people like the John Birch Society, and I hate to pick on, but the leadership, not people in the John Birch Society, the leadership of the John Birch Society that has made a point of trying to get you to buy into this concept. I mean, they've even had people that didn't even know any better, like Alex Newman, get out there and start talking about this to say, this is the way we've got to go. We've got to nullify. And folks, I'm telling you right now, nullification is tantamount to dividing the states and keeping us from being able to unite. It's empowering this concept that I can do whatever I want to do. And boy, as good as that may feel, it allows the government to run rickshaw over us like they've been doing for the past century plus. I don't understand why people can't get this. All they have to do, and it's not that I haven't sent this documentation off. It's not that they haven't had it in their hands. They love citing little, you know how I feel about people cherry picking the parts of the Constitution they want to support, like the Second Amendment folks and so forth. But, you know, when you have an organization like the John Birch Society, 10th Amendment Center, what have you, and they find this little line that Jefferson says it is a state's right to nullify. They just don't read the rest of the document that says, if so, then the states must secede from the union. No state can abide within the union and not abide by the expectations of the union. They all have to feel, unfortunately, the tyranny. They all have to suffer through the tyranny. To relieve themselves of tyranny when they don't actually unite and shut down the tyranny, because that's what you have to do. People have completely lost sight. When we go through the resolutions coming up, when we go through those, you are going to be blown away at how clear and succinct, when you really put it all together, how clear and succinct what we have to do as a republic in forcing the federal government into compliance. But to get there, we have to start creating constitutional counties. We actually need you to start moving all of your grassroots organizations into unifying, into becoming one. Anyway, so where we left off really talking about the Senate in Section 3, the beginning of this. And so let me just, because I start, this was the paragraph that I was going through at the time, which actually was modified by the 17th Amendment. Immediately after being assembled, and this is where I was telling you they'd be divided into classes, the seats of the senators of the first class shall be vacated at the expiration of the second year, of the second class at the expiration of the fourth year, and of the third class, the expiration of the sixth year. But every senator, I'm adding this, every senator that actually, once they get reelected in the Senate, then they actually have a term of 6 years. So the whole point was to ensure that one third of the Senate could be removed completely by election without really harming the business of the Senate. See, the Senate actually has a greater responsibility, because if you look at what they were doing, they were working with trades, because their responsibility was to ensure that trade deals were being done. If you go look at the House of Representatives, even though they had this list of powers, there was very little on their plate for them to do. Very little. Unless we were going to war. Excuse me. So as we kind of look at, you know, the Senate, I'm just trying to impress upon you that the Senate, there was this very looming risk of allowing the entire Senate to be completely replaced, where you could actually lose the continuity of what the business of the Senate was doing. So they kind of protected this one body. It's now, I want to emphasize this, because we've already talked about, or at least I've mentioned, the 17th Amendment. If they, in the Constitution, if the framers understood the importance of what the Senate body was actually going to be doing and the roles and responsibilities within Congress, then you have to understand why the progressives needed to actually seize control of the Senate by moving it away from who they were supposed to be supporting. In bicameral legislative bodies, when you have a House of Representatives and you have a Senate in our form of government, this goes back to republicanism, the Senate is required to represent the states, even though the people elect them. And this is how it gets perverted, because the Senate can now get away with ignoring the state legislature. Ask any state legislator, if you in your state or you know people in multiple states that are legislators, ask them what they feel and how they feel the Senate is responding and their senators are responding to their requests. They're not. As a matter of fact, your Senate has been bought and paid for by the globalists. This is why making all elections local is critical. Go back to the Bill of Rights of 2022, or that comprehensive list of issues to campaign on for the federal, state, and county elections. It's right there on my website on the Take Action page. It is the third document down. I call it the Bill of Rights for the 21st Century. Anyway, go read that and go read all elections must be local. This is how we take back our representation, and this is how we start taking back our Senate. And actually, if there's another article on the Constitutional Articles page, it talks about how we can actually dissolve this thing called the 17th Amendment. We can rescind it. We don't have to repeal it. But anyway, and that's because the federal government, because Joe Biden was president, the federal government made, or vice president, he made a huge mistake. That's how stupid Joe Biden is, because he doesn't understand the Constitution and he doesn't understand the rigidity or the beauty of our rigid legal system. Anyway, so then they go into, if vacancies happen by resignation or otherwise during the recess of the legislature of any state, the executive thereof may make temporary appointments until the next meeting of the legislature, which shall then fix such vacancies. Now, see, that was modified by the 17th Amendment, because the state legislatures no longer fill vacancies. But the executive still has the power to replace replacements until, you know, the election, or when an election period comes up to replace that. So in other words, if somebody dies as soon as they get elected, then they don't get, and they don't go up for, you know, whoever the replacement is, doesn't go up for re-election until that next election period that is suitable for that. And then they would serve out the rest of their term. Anyway, moving on, the next paragraph. No person shall be a senator who shall have attained to the age of 30 years and been 9 years a citizen of the United States, and who shall not, when elected, be an inhabitant, excuse me, an inhabitant of that state for which he shall be chosen. Now, this goes back to the fact that they have this requirement that it has to be an inhabitant of the state, but they don't put any time period to how long that person needs to be inhabitant. I believe the states should have the ability on top of that to say, you can't represent us unless you've been an inhabitant of the state for so long. The states have that right. I mean, the Constitution does not indicate that anybody can become a senator to represent a state. It just says that they must be an inhabitant of that state for which he shall be chosen. Now, Hillary Clinton, the carpetbagger Hillary Clinton, actually moved up to New York from Arkansas. Yeah, actually from D.C. Their residency was Arkansas when Bill Clinton became president, and they instantly moved up to New York, and then she ran for Senate and became a senator. That is the epitome of a carpetbagger. This has to change. We can't allow that to happen, and we'll be right back.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, health care, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so the next part of Section 3, where we're at right now, is the leader of the Senate. So here's the interesting twist for you. The vice president becomes the president of the Senate. And so the Vice President of the United States shall be the President of the Senate, but shall have no vote unless they be equally divided. So this is why they have two in each state. And why? So they're always going to be an even number, right? So if you have 13 states, but you have to have two, it means it'll always have an even number, 26. There's no way you can end up with an odd number. Okay, just to be clear, if you had 13 states and only one senator represented the state, then you would have an odd number, and the vice president would never be the tiebreaker. Or, well, I can't say that, but it would make it a little bit harder. But the fact is what the plan was to ensure that the state could even swing over a six-year period of time. The reason why they had such long terms was, one, for continuity of the Senate, and secondly, the reason they rotated was because there's a possibility over 6 years that the state sentiments and the direction that the state wanted to go, the state legislature wanted to go, would require a change. So that way they, didn't have to wait to change both of them for a full 6 years. they may have the opportunity to change one in just 2 years and actually start getting the movement or the changes that they want in the Senate to happen. In other words, the senators, even though it was a much higher prestige position than it was of the state legislature was the one that actually dictated how they were to be represented. You have to understand, this goes back to, again, republicanism and representation of the sovereigns. Our state legislators are sovereigns. I know people really have a hard time understanding sovereignty and this concept of sovereignty, but we're not talking, I speak with idiots all the time, people that don't have the capacity of understanding how we can segment sovereignty. When you create a contract and you basically give the responsibility of this person to do this, the responsibility of this person to do this, you actually empower them to be the ultimate deciders over the roles, responsibilities, and powers over that. In other words, they become the sovereign in the functioning body of this team that you've created over that one particular issue. And the next person becomes the sovereign. That's what we do when we create governments. And when we created a bicameral legislative body and created the Senate to represent the states, the state legislatures more specifically, because the state legislatures were taking care of the business of the states, the production of, you know, all of the different produce, all the different products that were coming out of the state to ensure that the exports of those products were actually being handled and being met. So what we have, folks, is we have a sovereignty that was delegated. We, the people, delegate power to our legislators, whether that be our county commissioners or supervisors, whether that be our state legislators, whether that be Congress. They have the authority to create law over us and tell us what to do in regards to those powers we've delegated. They do not have power. They are not sovereign over powers not delegated. This is what you have to get. This was the beauty of the Constitution. This was why the ratification debates are so important, because that's exactly how they spelled it out. They do not have jurisdiction. They do not have sovereignty. They do not have power over things not delegated. Healthcare, it doesn't exist. They can't tell you what to do. Energy, they can't tell you what to do. Labor, they can't come in and tell your business what you have to do. It's that simple. But we've been basically bamboozled by all governments at all levels to say they dictate everything, and they don't. This is the magnitude of the problem. As we start going through this, we're going to continue to prove this to you. But anyway, the Senate shall choose their officers and also a president pro tempore. And in the absence of the vice president, or when he shall exercise the office of the president of the United States. So in other words, this president pro tempore is to basically be the president. So in case the vice president is unavailable, then this president pro tempore will basically kind of fill in, because they will choose their own officers. And so when the vice president is there to serve, he serves as the president pro tempore, but they can choose their own as well. Not to create a clash, the vice president will be that president pro tempore. And when Pence on January 6th acted as president pro tempore of the Senate, he violated the Constitution in allowing the unconstitutionally chosen Electoral College. You know, saying all these things is a mouthful, and to get them right each time isn't easy. So if you hear me pause just so I can, you know, get my mouth and mind around what has to come out in what order, there you go. But this is not rocket science. It's not, you know, these million-dollar words that have 15 syllables. This is pretty simple stuff, folks. If an idiot like me can get this, anybody can get this. It just takes a little bit of time. All you got to do is start filling the sandbags. And what I mean by filling sandbags is start taking the time working by reading. You know, each time you read and each time you read it, you fill the sandbag. Okay, I've read the ratification debates once. There's a sandbag. You got to start filling sandbags. You just have to start reading. And, excuse me, you will realize for yourself, GR is 100% right. I mean, you'll have a hard time trying to convince me otherwise. If you've read this, this is why reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. So if we disagree, it means one of us is being unreasonable. So anyway, excuse me. The Senate shall have the sole power to try all impeachments. So in other words, if a president is to be impeached, so in other words, the House of Representatives declares a president must be impeached. In other words, they declare that a crime of such magnitude has been committed by the president and the qualifications and standards are that threshold that means that he can be impeached. Then the House of Representatives is duty bound to basically create the charge and the Senate is duty bound to charge him or actually try him. And so they shall try all impeachments. When sitting for that purpose, they shall be on oath or affirmation. When the President of the United States is tried, the Chief Justice shall preside, and no person shall be convicted without the concurrence of two-thirds of the members present. In other words, to get Trump, to get Jackson, to get Clinton convicted, it required two-thirds. It is a, not Jackson, Johnson, Nixon. It's a high bar, but you know, based on the sentiments at the time, Nixon may have been successfully impeached, which is why he resigned, because there was enough people that realized that he was dirty. Or actually, it's not that he was dirty, he made the mistake. And he believed that at the time there was enough of the progressives, you know, making a clamor. And he, you know, they do these calculations. Clinton, he didn't step down. He knew for a fact that it would to get that two-thirds out of the Senate. I tell you what, there's no doubt that there's this meeting with Nixon, with Trump, with Clinton. They sit down and they look at the senators and they go, "How's this guy going to go?" And so Nixon really felt that they had enough people in the Senate that possibly would have convicted him. And had that been the case, then voila, he would have been slammed, body slammed. So when he resigned as president, it foregoed, or, you know, it basically, you know, took away the removing of the emoluments and everything else, and he was able to create a library and all of that because Ford exonerated him. And because Ford exonerated him, that killed Ford's chances. In some respects, it killed Ford's chances to get reelected. And this is why the Democratic Party put a communist like Carter, a Christian communist, into office, because they knew this was their chance. You know, now we can put a real radical in there. And he created the CRA and a lot of other things that was used later on to decimate America. This is how they've been working. They've been working years in getting these little agendas forward, these little power plays, and, you know, knocking America down another peg, another peg, another peg. Anyway, moving on. The judgment of the impeachment shall not extend further than to removal from the office and disqualification to hold and enjoy any office of honor, trust, or profit under the United States. But the party convicted shall nevertheless be liable and subject to indictment, trial, judgment, and punishment according to the law. So in other words, when they impeached, and had they impeached Nixon, and they actually, you know, voted to remove him, then he would have lost everything. He would have lost his retirement and everything. So the fact is, folks, that impeachment is to remove the emoluments. Now, when the Constitution was written, no emoluments post your presidency existed. Today, because a president has emoluments, they have a position, They have, you know, a retirement pay. They have a security detail. Those can be removed, and the impeachment process is the way to do it. Anyway, we will be right back after these promos.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so to kind of wrap up here, let me see if we can get into, and we will be, we get into and get well into actually Section 4. So basically, the point I was trying to make is you can actually impeach presidents. And so, folks, if we can actually get our federal government back into control, every president that we've actually had sitting in that office, if they're still alive, if any of their estate, their wives are still alive, like Nancy Reagan, such as, you know, Mrs. Carter, if by the time we get in there and Jimmy Carter's passed, all of these different, Mrs. Nixon, any of them, Ford, it doesn't matter. If there are emoluments still being managed by all of these folks, we should shut them down and we should try them all for impeachments. Because, folks, when you understand the magnitude, this is not a priority, by the way. It's just like, I'll get into it on Feedback Friday. We do maintain Feedback Friday. So Friday, I was lambasted by a few people. Because I was considered a little insensitive with the comment last Friday. So I will address that on Feedback Friday. But anywho, what I'm trying to say is this is not the number one priority. The number one priority is getting the federal government to operate within the framework. And that's the same thing with judges. That's the same thing with all of our federal government, to reel back its jurisdiction to the absolute limits of the Constitution, not to the arbitrary limits that they have chosen for themselves over the course of the last two century plus. So anyway, as we kind of move forward, just do you understand that the impeachment process is not, it's only removing the emoluments, the retirement, which means that any person under the Constitution, now when they try to apply this, and the funny thing, folks, I want you to understand this, they do this now to military personnel, where the military personnel are actually protected by the fundamental contract law. There was nowhere stipulated that you could have your emoluments removed. Once you've reached the criteria of the retirement, And unless you've actually been proven to commit a crime, they cannot come after you, because what's happening is any patriot that is speaking out against government today and their retired military, then they're trying to take your military retirement, your military benefits away from you. In other words, you can't criticize us. Folks, absolutely we can, because you're supposed to be abiding by the Constitution, and that's what we're doing. And they're weaponizing any tool and any mechanism they can, and they hurt people by using this power of the purse. So just to be clear, this is important. You're going to actually see patriots in the upcoming years, because I was informed by a friend of mine who was just trying to get by. He'd been diagnosed with cancer. He ended up dying. A fellow Marine, retired Marine, that was working in the intelligence community and trying to bide his time so that he could finally get to a point where he could, you know, retire and really take care of. But he had to wait. I think he was waiting for an organ transplant or something like that, because the cancer basically just destroyed, you know, this particular organ. But anyway, without going into the details, he warned me. He said that they're starting to go through the government ranks of any retiree, that if they come across patriotic in any way, they could lose their job, they'll lose their retirement, they'll lose their military retirement. I mean, they want to go after them to the fullest extent possible. And I'm going, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? The contract law, when these guys signed up in the military, you know, when you retired, you retired. You could not be held accountable. As a matter of fact, it's unconscionable that they could actually create laws to go after your speech. Whatever happened to the freedom of speech? In other words, pornography is okay. You know, a picture of the Virgin Mary with elephant dung on it is okay. But they're not going to tolerate patriots speaking out against unconstitutional government? Folks, Biden has told you that they have the power to shut this down. They are looking to do the crusade. And they already know who their targets are. Yours truly is probably one of them. Anyway, Section 4, the times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof. But the Congress may at any time by law make or alter such regulations, except as to the places of choosing senators. Now, that changed with the 17th Amendment. But more importantly, the violation that we're looking at here is the Congress may at any time by law make or alter such regulations. They may alter such regulations, but they can't actually change what the state legislatures have in this authority. In other words, elections are in the power of the states. The federal government has no jurisdiction. Even at this point in time, they couldn't dictate, and they didn't dictate, that a U.S. citizen had to vote. It wasn't until they actually started getting into the election game with the 15th Amendment, in dictating that blacks would be able to vote, regardless of race or what have you. Because the southern states, again, those southern states weren't behaving. You know, it's so funny when I talk about the 14th Amendment and I hear people say, oh, the 14th Amendment's terrible. The states weren't behaving bad. Oh, yeah, well, explain the 15th Amendment to me. I mean, the states have been, when it came to the oppression of people, the states have always been the culprits in behaving badly. Now the federal government has finally been empowered to do all of the impressing and to enslave us. Folks, we're ripe for the picking. They have almost everything they need. The only thing they don't have is the state's concurrence to put aside the Constitution and abolish all of your rights. We're getting that close to that, though. The next financial crisis will cause that. So anyway, moving on to Section 4, the next paragraph, which was modified by the 20th Amendment. Congress shall assemble at least once in every year, and such meeting shall be on the first Monday in December, unless they shall by law appoint a different day. Now, we'll actually get into the 20th Amendment and how it kind of changed, because it also changed in the choosing of the president and so forth, because it actually moved everything into January. Anyway, Section 5, each house shall be the judge of the elections, returns, and qualifications of its own members, and a majority of each shall constitute a quorum. So when they talk about each house shall be a judge of the elections, returns, and qualifications of its own members, they have basically taken the law and allowed the laws to be violated as they've made their own judges. Now, this is one of the biggest mistakes that I think that they made, because, again, the framers didn't understand how corrupt our politicians would become. And so this is how Nancy Pelosi has actually threatened not to allow people, because she didn't like their positions, or she goes after them for their party alignment or their political alignment, their ideological alignment in fighting communism in Congress. You can't tell me that they have not gone after people and say, we don't think we're going to seat this person, or they have removed them because of, you know, they're speaking out and not. And so this is the hypocrisy. Remember Maxine Waters, and remember some of those Congress people that actually spoke out about, you know, these, you know, the rioters in 2020 and 2021, and saying burn it down, or going after Trump and going after conservatives and people. Are you kidding me? The hypocrisy? It's not just hypocrisy, folks. This is the intolerance. This is just to show you how this is the face of the devil. A just person, a person that believes everybody should be treated equal, everybody should have opportunity, then you can actually see that when a person exudes that, then you see fairness and you see equality. But when you see and empower somebody that is evil, they speak the words, but they act completely different. They're scorched earth towards anybody they possibly can who thinks differently. This is why the scale of liberty is paramount. When we get started with the ratification debates and the forming of this nation, and this reason why I go through the letter commitment from Billy Graham, why we go through these things, my friends, is so that you can understand the magnitude in the complete opposites, the diametric opposites of a person that believes in liberty and these people that believe in subjugation and communism and statism. Do not think that they will be merciful. They have no mercy. They don't have the ability to do it. It is all motivated, and the ends justify their means, and it is ideologically motivated. Because you're their enemy, they want and they will be glad to destroy you. So, as you can tell, we're out of time for Section 5. In our next episode, maybe we'll get to Section 8. Maybe. But as we start moving forward, we're going to start seeing more and more violations of the Constitution, especially when we get to Section 8. But I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobius Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.